What's up, guys? Coach Az, Way of the Warrior podcast, episode 8. I hope you are all doing well. I like to start these podcasts with an apology for some reason. It's the British in me, I assume. I apologize, A, for looking a little disheveled. It's early morning here, and the reason I am up and recording this early morning is because it's hot as balls. I'm in the UK. We're having a bit of a heat wave this week. It's like coming up to 30 degrees. For some of you, that's like, you're like, what's 30 degrees? That's not hot. In the UK, it's hot. And by the way, not a martial art conversation, but an important thing to know. 30 degrees in the UK is like 50 degrees in other countries. But don't ask me why. I guess it's our buildings aren't built for it. Our roads aren't built for it. We just don't cope too well with extreme temperatures of either side. We get down to zero in the cold, we don't do too good. We don't handle snow very well in this country. And we get up to 30 degrees and we don't really handle the heat and the sun too well. So I apologize if I look a little rough because it's early. I haven't sorted my life out just yet. I also apologize to the video viewers if I am constantly wiping my face of sweat with this towel as we go through. It was either wipe the face of sweat or have a fan on in the corner to keep me cool. Audio quality takes priority, so we're wiping face throughout the podcast. We're sipping water throughout the podcast. I like to rewatch my podcast, not from a narcissistic point of view, but to try and see what I can improve moving forward. And I watched last week's and it made me even more depressed. We were talking about depression in martial arts and I was having a bit of a down week. So I apologize again if that was a bit of a downer for you guys. I'm in a far better place this week and I've brought some far more interesting, far less emotional topics to talk about with you guys. So let's jump straight into it. It is the Freedom Day has passed in the UK. So in the UK now, you are now basically allowed to do pretty much everything, including sparring for adults, which is something that we have been waiting for and hoping for since the pandemic kicked in. It's a very big deal. So I wanted to talk a little bit about returning to sparring and some of the things to keep in mind, and some of the things to think about for any of you that have been out from sparring for a long time, but this will also apply to any of you that are new to sparring. And I use sparring as a very broad term for boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai, even rolling in jiu-jitsu. For me, I consider it sparring. So I'm going to give you just some general advice and some things to consider, some things to think about for any of you that are getting back into or are starting sparring. We're then going to talk a little bit about programming your training in terms of how often can you train? How often do you train? What should you be working on given the time that you have? How to set goals appropriately for that amount of time, irrespective of what martial art, what your goals are for trying to achieve. So they're the two main topics that we're going to discuss. And we're going to start with the returning to sparring. Let me start by saying that on Monday, my timetable with my adults on a Monday is we do a sparring class at 7 o'clock and then the general adult class at 8 o'clock. So pre-COVID, the idea was we would do an hour of sparring for those of you that enjoyed sparring. And then the adult class would have a more structured lesson plan in terms of we would, you know, maybe do pad drills, we'd do some strength training, flexibility, and maybe some sparring. But for those who just wanted to get in the rounds, there was the option. So this was the first week in a very long time where we were actually able to just spar in the sparring class. And then for the main class, because everyone hadn't sparred, I decided we were going to spar for that as well. So we did 2 hours sparring on Monday. And I have never, for a long time, I have not been as happy as I was for those 2 hours. And happy is maybe not the correct word, because what I really mean is I didn't think about a single thing for 2 hours straight. My brain was completely distracted, switched off, whatever you want to call it, from the outside world. And I was completely enveloped in my training. And it was a beautiful feeling. Like at the end of it, it felt like a rebirth. I felt like I'd been on holiday. because I think where my brain was just constantly on, and you know, we're all dealing with whatever we're dealing with in life, and we're ticking that over. And I got a reprise. I got a 2-hour window where I didn't worry about money, where I didn't worry about relationships, where I didn't worry about the existential crisis that is my life and the purpose of me being on this planet. I just got to enjoy the thing I love to do the most. So I wanted to start with that because for me, sparring is one of the most powerful, useful things I could do. I've spoke before about the risk of serious injury and how for me, even things like brain damage, which I don't think is a real serious concern when you're sparring like we do, which is very sensibly and very light. But even that would never trump the benefits that I get from taking part in it. It's just too invaluable to me. I will never stop sparring. Even as an old man, I'm going to find a way to continue doing it. Okay, so let's get started. Returning to sparring. I'm going to give you a couple of words of wisdom as someone who has been doing it for a very long time and has watched people, in particular people who have come back after a long layoff and tried to pick up where they left off and the mistakes I've seen made. Number one, if you don't listen to anything else, just listen to this bit of advice. Don't rush to return to sparring. And that means in twofold. One, let's say like me, your club offers a sparring specific class. Don't feel the need to jump straight on that class as soon as it's available. Do a few pad sessions. Do a few conditioning sessions. Get yourself in generally good shape, relatively speaking. And get yourself relatively confident in your techniques, your combination, your guard, before stepping into sparring. Because as many of you will know, and if you don't know, almost everything you think you know will go out the window once you start sparring. And you will default back to your most fundamental programming. So only the stuff that is truly deeply ingrained will probably become present in sparring. This is why, you know, you've practiced a drill about countering and stepping off, pivoting and throwing a check hook or something. But when someone actually comes at you, you just close your eyes and lift your arms up like this. You go back to like your reflex reaction because you haven't ingrained that check hook movement and that response to someone coming forward enough to actually throw it in sparring, which can be very disheartening, which can be a real stab at the ego. And what I'm trying to help you with this advice in particular is to not walk out of that sparring session at the end feeling dejected, feeling worse than when you went in. That's not the objective. The objective always with training, in my opinion, priority number one is to have a good time. Unless you're training professionally, unless you're trying to become a world champion, in which case sometimes training is going to suck and it's meant to suck because it's sacrifice to achieve a goal. But if you're training recreationally, if you're training for fun, if you're training just to get better, then training should be fun, number one. And if you don't respect stuff like this, you're going to end up getting bruised, not only physically, but emotionally. Your ego is going to take a hit and you're going to walk out feeling not very good about yourself, which is going to make you not want to go back and do it again, which is going to mean you don't progress. So don't rush. When you get into sparring, do things like shadow sparring, body only, go with very selective partners. This is all, of course, if your gym allows it, if you get the option to do so. You know who in the room you can kind of go real easy with. You know who in the room you can take it at a slower pace with. So you can, you know, dip your toe. Start at the shallow end of the pool and slowly make your way into the deep end. The sharks, the more strong opponents, as you build up in confidence. Now, I'm saying all this, but I don't actually allow my guys to do this. We all just spar each other and everyone switches and grabs new partners. And some weeks, like this week, whether you were in sparring class or normal class, guess what? You were sparring. But I made clear to everyone, I said, if you don't feel quite up to it yet, leave your head guard and gum shield off and just do some body only. Just be very clear that you're just body only. If you need to, just tell the partner that you're only shadow sparring and they'll shadow spar with you. Now, 80% of the class were still doing full sparring, full kit on, hitting all the targets. Some people kept their head guards off and it was absolutely fine. That, like, my big thing, especially in a club, is to try to generate a environment where people don't feel judged for their decisions because everyone's in a different place. I hear these stories of people where, you know, they don't put a head guard on and someone calls them a bad name and all the rest. And I'm like, no, I don't like that stuff. I want people to feel comfortable. I want people to feel comfortable training in an environment where, regardless of what their goal is and their stage with their training, they can get something from it. So we had people full sparring, we had people doing body only, and then I've got one girl at the minute, she's got a real bad injury, so she was just doing shadow. And it worked just fine, because what it meant was those doing the full sparring could full spar, and when they needed a break or to take it down a level, they could jump in with someone who was body only, or they could jump in with the shadow sparring girl. And it meant that they didn't have to stop training, but they got to do a lighter, easier round before jumping back in with the stronger guys, as well as obviously taking breaks. Let's go through a few things that will definitely happen. You will be super tired. And this is regardless of if you are in shape or not. Even if you are in unbelievable good condition, you've been keeping up your running, you've been going to the pad drill sessions, you've been hitting the bag, sparring is different because what sparring has that almost everything else doesn't have is a response factor. You are responding to what your partner is doing, you are reacting, and often you're reacting involuntary. So it's, you know, fight or flight response. You're being triggered, you're flinching, you're jumping back, you're shifting forward. And all these very dynamic, explosive movements draw a lot more energy. When you're hitting pads, let's say you're throwing a jab cross, you're being dynamic and explosive in the moment that you throw the punches. Bam, bam, right? And then for the rest of it, you're not being dynamic and explosive. You're just moving around, you're shuffling. When you're sparring, let's say you're only throwing a jab cross, you're still having these moments of being extremely dynamic because you're flinching and responding to what they are doing. Maybe they throw a jab cross and you've got to quickly get your guard up. Maybe they shoot a kick and you've got to quickly shift your body back to get out of range or get your hand up to block it. And all of this is energy that you wouldn't have been burning in the same length of a round on the pads or on the punch bag. So you will get super tired and that's normal. Don't start trying to break that down and figure out what that is. Hydration is key. And this is something I harp on about all the time because I've seen it. I know exactly what it means. If you are thirsty, by the way, just for any of you that don't think about this stuff too much, if you're thirsty, you feel like you need a drink, you're already dehydrated. You are already mildly, that's a sign, that's a symptom of dehydration. So if you walk into class and you feel that sensation, so you drink a little bit of water and jump on the mats, all you've done is eliminate the symptom. You've not eliminated the cause. You are still dehydrated. You're going to jump on those mats. What are you going to do? You're going to start sweating. And that sweat is going to mean that you're going to go deeper into dehydration. The problem with this is dehydration kills performance. And I don't mean 10%, I don't mean 15, I mean like 25, 30% of your performance will go out the window. And that's across the board. Power, speed, conditioning, reaction times, all of this stuff will suffer. Like I said, we got a heat wave here, so you're sweating profusely, a lot more than you normally would. And you need to address this. So please, guys, come to training well hydrated. Have drunk at least a liter of water before you step on the mats, before you step in the room. Make sure you got your hydration up, because what you're doing when you're drinking during class is you're keeping yourself hydrated, not getting yourself hydrated. You can't get hydrated in class because the second you start sweating, that's what you're replenishing. So you need to drink before. Don't be afraid of salt. If you are sweating profusely, you're sweating out all the minerals from your body, and one of the most important ones is our sodium. We need to keep that. So eat salty foods throughout the day. Don't go crazy with it, but I just mean if you got your salt cracker, right? Crack, crack. Two cracks on every meal is not going to do you any harm if you're training regularly, sweating a lot, and drinking plenty of water, flushing and hydrating your system. Think about Lucozade and Gatorade. Do you know what that really is? It's sugar, water, and minerals. So the thing that they add in that makes Gatorade different from a lemonade is they add in some salts. They add in some of these minerals that you lose through sweating. And that's why it's good for sports performance. That's why we take it on. Don't be too harsh on yourself. Like I said at the start about not rushing yourself into it, you're probably going to suck. You're probably going to not do all the things you think you know to do. You're probably going to get hit a lot more than you want to get hit. You're probably going to, quote unquote, lose a lot of the sparring rounds. Don't be too harsh on yourself about it. Don't beat yourself up any more than the room is going to beat you up. Understand that. Put it in perspective, right? You haven't done something for 18 months, or you're a new, you've never done it in your life. In what universe did you think you were going to be good? I play music, okay? I play the guitar, I play piano. And after I finished, I did it for a degree. After I finished my degree, I was so burnt out from playing music that I just packed it all away. I packed all my guitars, all my instruments away. I didn't want to see them because for 3 years straight, it had gone from becoming a passion project to becoming a real chore. A year later, I got my guitars back out and I sucked. I couldn't play almost anything that I used to be able to play. I certainly couldn't play it as well. I was tripping all over myself. But I found it hilarious because I really understood that what else was going to happen? A year of not doing something, you don't get better at something by not doing it, right? So you're going to suck on your first week of sparring. You're going to suck for your first couple of weeks of sparring. And then the timing will start coming back. And then the reflexes will start coming back. And then you'll start reestablishing things like range and distance. And it'll improve. But go easy on yourself. With that, don't try to win. I've done a lot of videos on this recently. I think it's a really important topic to consider. Don't try to win sparring matches. Don't try to make... So the objective of sparring is to improve and work on your technique. The problem is people kind of treat it like a game. Again, I'm going to use my example of football / soccer because it helps with this. If you're playing a game of football, the objective is to score goals in the team's net, the opposing team. Don't let the opposing team score goals in your net. If you do those two things, score and don't let them score, you're going to win the match. In a kickboxing match, your objective is hit the person in the relative scoring areas. Do not allow the person to hit you in your relative scoring areas. If you do these two things, you're going to win the match. When you're training, you might be working specifically on one of these two parts of the game. So you might be focused on trying to hit the person. You might be focused on working on your defenses and not getting hit. You might be focused on both. But what I'm trying to say is, understand that you're not playing the game right now. This isn't the tournament. This isn't the fight that you've been training for. This is the training. You're still in drilling mode. So don't be worried about beating your training partners right now. Worry about setting small goals and working towards them. Here's a good example that I put into practice all the time. Sometimes there's a specific technique that I want to sharpen up. So I will walk into a sparring session and I'll say, my goal for today is to land 10 roundhouse kicks to the body. That's my number. That's my goal. I don't tell anyone this goal. I don't communicate this to any of my sparring partners. I just have it in mind. Now, this doesn't mean that the only thing I'm throwing is that kick because I need to set it up. I need to create openings for it. But it means that that's what I'm gearing the session towards. Now, I come up against someone who's got solid defense. I can't land this kick for love or money. If I allow my ego to get in the way, I'll switch up tactics. I'll try to land something else in that sparring round. If it was a fight, I certainly would switch up tactics because that weapon's not working, so I'd go somewhere else. But in this training session where I've said to myself, my focus is going to be on landing this kick, I am going to continue to try and land it even if I have a 0% success rate on this person. Even if it means that I end up eating some shots that otherwise I wouldn't have eaten. And I'm not going to leave that sparring round feeling dejected about it. I'm going to leave it understanding that I stuck with what I tried to work towards and I made a small incremental improvement. Even if I didn't hit him. Because it means I worked towards that goal. It means I put the time and attention on what I was trying to achieve. Now, I've spoke before again about the exception to this rule, which is when you are prepping for a fight, in which case you want to win the sparring rounds because you want to start building that mental confidence. But that's not what we're talking about today. Today, we're talking about getting back into sparring. And it's important to set small goals for yourself. And especially at the start. And I mean small. Small goal might be number one, finish the sparring. As in, get from the beginning of the class at 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. and don't rest out more than 3 rounds. Conditioning. You have no care for how well you perform in those rounds. Your only focus is on completing the rounds. If you can do that, then you're putting yourself in a good place. You're putting yourself in a good position. Then the goal is start landing the jab. And again, get specific. Land one jab on every sparring partner. Start every round with throwing the jab. Set yourself these little goals. That's going to make it a lot more progressive for you. That's going to stop you getting too up in your head about how well you performed. Because if you're losing all the rounds, that's going to not feel great. But if you're losing all the rounds, but you're slowly ticking off your little personal goals, that's going to feel a lot better. All right, I lost to everyone in the room, but I hit everyone in the room with a jab, and that's what I came in here trying to do. Great. Yes? Communication is key. I have been telling my guys at the start of every session about the importance of communication during sparring. You must create coaches who listen to this. You must create an environment where people feel comfortable to tell each other that you're going too hard or you're going too soft. Students, you must feel comfortable and you must feel confident in telling people in your class you're hitting too hard or you're going too soft. It is nothing to do with ego. It is nothing to do with you not being tough enough or them not being tough enough. It's about trying to optimize your training to get the most out of it. You're not going to get anything out of smashing each other. You're also not going to get anything out of tapping each other gently with the edge of your glove. There's a happy medium. There's a level of tender intensity, yeah, this controlled intensity that sits somewhere in the middle, and that's the sweet spot. And the way you get there is by being very open in your communications with your sparring partners. And we're going to talk about 5 different types of sparring partner in a minute, and all of these sit on different ends of this spectrum of this sweet point. But the more you communicate both to each other and the more the instructor goes on about it, the quicker the whole room gets into the right place. And we had it only yesterday, I'd say, Tuesday's session, we had a room where that was happening. Everyone was being very open with each other, discussing it. We're talking during sparring, but I just mean someone would take a crack and they go, "You all right?" And you go, "Yep, just bring the power down." They touch gloves, they carry on, and it was great. Or they'd be going so soft and one of them would stop, go, "You can hit me harder, you know, like it's cool." And they'd give them permission to open up and then they'd improve on their sparring. So it's so important. It's such a valid thing. And I think, especially for men, 97% of my viewers and listeners tend to be men based on analytics. We have a real issue with this because we don't want our pride to get in the way. We don't want to say, "You're hitting me too hard." and sound like a wuss, right? But it's not what it is. It's not you being unable to hack it. It really isn't. It's just not constructive to spar like that. But also understand there are just people who just don't realize. They just don't know that they do it. I've always thought that that wasn't true, that they must be aware of it. But I know so many guys now, they're so nice, they're so compassionate, they're good people, and there's no way that they would consciously be smashing each other. But they're not conscious of it. They just don't see that they do it. So here's five people to be aware of when you're returning to sparring. Five people to be aware of if you're coming into sparring. And I find that these people are in every gym. Almost every gym, almost every training session, especially if it's like an open thing. Like if it's a, I've been invited to some closed door training sessions where everyone's very much on the same wavelength, and then you don't get this as much, at least not to the extremes. But if you're in an open room or a regular class, guaranteed you can point these people out and figure out who they are. Be aware of the hard hitter. Yeah, there's someone, they've just got cement blocks for hands. They just hit hard. Yes. Communicate with them. Let them know that they're hitting you too hard. Let them know that they need to pull it back. Keep your guards up with them. Yeah. Be smart defensively. Don't cower from them, because that's not going to help you. You must fight them, because they're only effective. These hard hitters only get you when you just allow them to get you. If you can give some back, you can start wearing in on their gas tank. You can start making them tired. You can start making them have to fight more technical. You can then start having success with them. Don't be afraid of them, but do communicate with them. On the other side of the spectrum is the super softs. Super softs are people where they don't have that grr in them. Yeah, they don't have I don't want to say violence, because I hate using that word, but you know what I mean. They don't have that bit in them that's going to make them want to hit someone else, even in a controlled sparring environment. And for me, when I see people spar with these people, they tend to just match them and go super soft. But again, it's like the same as trying to go super hard with someone who hits super hard. You're reinforcing the wrong attitude to training. Make them get comfortable with hitting you harder, and then hit them harder. Don't do it the other way around. This is the mistake people make with the soft ones, is they hit them harder to try and draw it out of them, and it doesn't. What it does is it makes them go even softer to try and tell you to go softer. First, give them permission. Make them know that it's okay. Let them hit you a bit harder and go, good. Make them do it again. Good. And then give it back to them. And then what you've done is you've shown them, yes, it's okay. This is how we spar. This is the right way to do it. This is the right level of intensity. Be really careful of the wild one. Normally the wild one is a beginner, or it's, again, someone who's been away for a long while and they feel like they got something to prove. They feel like they've got to get somewhere with it. They've lost a few rounds, they're getting frustrated, they start getting wild. They start swinging haymakers, they start losing a bit of control. The wild ones can't sustain it though. So again, be smart, intelligent, be defensively sound. At the beginning of the round, you're gonna find by about halfway through, they're gonna gas out. And about halfway through the session, they're gonna start sitting out of rounds, because it's not sustainable. If you're aware of being a wild one, we'll talk about how you can fix that in a moment. Be aware of the insane one. Yeah, the insane one is the one that smiles at you a little bit crazy. They stick their tongue out you. They say all this kind of wild stuff. They bring like a crazy kind of energy to the room. And again, the tendency is either to try and match it or to kind of like bow down to it. Don't let it affect you. Don't let their quirkiness get into what you're doing. Stay focused on your game plan. Stay focused on what you're doing in the room. And don't let the outside factors of the way they're behaving influence you. This goes in with the cocky one. The cocky one is the one who maybe hasn't missed sparring. They've been finding a way to get it in. They've got the time and they've got the speed. And maybe they're sparring with their hands down. Maybe they're like putting their head in front of you like this. Maybe they're hitting you with all the fancy shots. Again, Don't let it dishearten you. Don't feel the need to try and imitate it. Focus on your small goals and your progression moving forward, and you'll be just fine. Now, if you related to any of those people, if you feel like you're the hard hitter, the super soft, the wild one, the insane intense one, or the cocky one, here's something that you want to start implementing in for sparring, and that is an anchor. I suggest go watching some Raymond Daniels fights. Raymond Daniels is one of the all-time greats in kickboxing, now making his way into MMA in his later years. Raymond Daniels is very famous for what he does pre-fight. And what he does pre-fight, for any of the video viewers, you can get a little preview. He goes up and round and in, and he makes all these noises. He kisses the hand. He puts one up to the sky. He's got this whole routine before he then turns and faces his opponent. And it's an anchor. What it is it's a ritual. It's a routine that he uses to anchor himself down into the ground. Because when we spar, and especially when, if any of you compete and fight, you get very off the ground, right? Your adrenaline is up, your cortisol levels are up, your stress hormones are up, and you end up very ungrounded. You need some kind of trigger to bring you back down to earth so that you can stay clear in your mind so that you can perform the way you want to perform. Remember what we spoke about the start, about you know what you want to do, but it never comes out in sparring. You just go back to like your basic instincts. That's because you've become ungrounded and you've lost your cool. Have an anchor. So have something that you can do, not only pre-sparring, but actually right in the fight to help calm you back down in a bad moment. So if you hit someone too hard and they kind of call you on it and you're like, yeah, I'm a little worked up, have something like a bump of the gloves, a hit of the chest, you pinch yourself, I don't know, you step on your own foot. Have a little ritual, something you either say to yourself or do to yourself that brings you back down, okay? Or if you're the softer one and you know it and you know you're just not going for it, have an anchor, have something that you associate with flicking that switch so that you can actually go. You can actually hit them. You can change in that moment into this persona of someone who does make the impact, make the contact. Really useful. Guys, I hope that's helpful. The biggest thing with sparring is just please have fun with it. Please enjoy your sparring. Please enjoy your training. Find a way to make it fun for yourself. Don't make it a chore. Don't make it some dramatic, upsetting thing that hurts you and upsets you. That's not what it's about. It's a good time. For me, sparring is the best of times. I'll take sparring off over a night out of drinking any day. Me and my pals punching into each other in the face, way better than pounding back a few beers in a bar. Let's move on, shall we? Part two today, we're going to talk about programming your training. And I'm going to try and address this from a myriad of views in terms of how much time you have to devote to it, what you're trying to achieve with it, and what your expectations should be of what you're working towards. There's a few questions you need to ask yourself when you're sitting down to program your training. First of all, really, the first thing you have to ask is, how many hours can you commit? Because really that's going to determine, people do it the other way around. They set their goals up first and then they look at how many hours they can commit. But your goal might not be conducive to what you can commit to it. For example, you might say, I want to be a professional MMA UFC fighter. I want to get into the UFC. But because of my two jobs and my wife and my three kids and all my other commitments, I can only commit 2 hours a week. Sorry, you can't become a professional MMA fighter and fight in the UFC training 2 hours a week. It's not enough time. So you can choose at that point to either adjust the goal or to find more time. But these two things have to go in together. So take a look at your week. Take a look at your life, your schedule, and be very brutally honest with yourself and conservatively honest with yourself, especially at the start, with how many hours can you truly commit to it? And by it, I mean it in its entirety. As well as the training, going to classes, it's also going to the gym. lifting weights, going for runs, all of this counts. It's all under the umbrella. Put it under the umbrella of how many hours can you commit to exercise. And it doesn't have to be hours either, because a 30-minute run one day a week is perfect. It doesn't need to be an hour that you commit to that. You can commit a little less time. Once you've got how many hours, then you can start establishing your goals. Are you training in one style or multiple? Is a really important question. Let's say you want to get good at jiu-jitsu, which is grappling, and you want to get good at Muay Thai, which is striking. What is the priority? Do you want to get really good at Muay Thai, in which case you're going to devote more of the time to it, and, you know, proficient at BJJ? Is it a 50-50? What is the relationship? Only you can answer that question. I love Reddit, and you see people on Reddit asking the world, how much should I train? Well, it depends on what you want, right? Don't ask me how much BJJ you should do compared to Muay Thai. What do you want to be better at? Because that's the differentiating factor. The one you spend the more time at is the one you're going to improve at. What level do you want to take it to? Do you want to get to world championship status, in which case you're committing a lot of time to it? Or is it just like you're a weekend warrior and you want to just get better over time, progress slowly over time? What are you working towards? Really good thing to start establishing is, what is the goal? Because training for the sake of training can get stale real fast. So either a grading, where you know you've got a set date and you've got set stuff that you need to learn by that date in order to prepare, or a new belt and you've got to progress and learn certain things and get up to a certain stage, or a competition, ability to compete, put yourself up against someone, put your stuff to the test. If it's none of this, then again, set yourself personalized goals. Like, again, inspiring. I want to be able to beat that guy. I want to be able to land a head kick on all of these guys and work towards these goals. Then this is the biggest one. If you don't listen to anything else, if you take one thing away, make it non-negotiable. Let's say that you have dedicated 3 hours of your week to training. Keep in mind, 24 hours a day, half of that is sleeping, a lot of that is working. Let's say conservatively, you got 4 hours of every day that's kind of your time to do with as you please. Let's get rid of one of those hours for eating, showering, pooping, all of that. You got 3 hours of your day that is your time to do with as you please. Yes? 3 times 7. Don't mind my maths. I'm going to say it's 21. If I'm wrong, I apologize. Maths was never my strong suit. 21 hours of the week, which is your time. And you're going to take 3 of those hours and dedicate them to improving at martial arts. That's not negotiable. That's not something that you can sometimes let off, because it's not much time. In the grand scheme of the time you have on this earth and the time you have to get good at stuff, that's not a lot of time. So it's not negotiable. You will go to training 3 hours a week if that's what you've decided. If it's untenable, then you need to change it, but change it consciously. But really, don't move the bar. Don't move the goal to make the goal easier. Move yourself. Work yourself forward to get it up to what you want it so that you can reach it. And then set yourself realistic expectations within those goals. And finally, we attach to those realistic expectations, understand the importance of incorporating rest. Let's go through 3 examples. The weekend warrior. The weekend warrior is someone who trains once or twice a week. You can make it to class once or twice a week, and that's all you can commit to it. Maybe on top of that, you get to the gym once or twice a week, as in weightlifting gym. Maybe you include a run. So in total, you're exercising like governments generally recommend, 30 to 45 minutes a day, 5 to 6 days a week, 2 of which are martial arts specific training. Your goal is to get ready or get good. In my opinion, it would be to get good at one martial art. You've chosen your style, you've chosen your club, you attend there, and that's what you're looking to improve at. Great. In terms of level, you're not trying to become a world champion. You're not trying to do anything mad with it, but you're trying to improve. Maybe you're going through gradings. Maybe you want to compete in a little amateur tournament or an amateur fight. Maybe you just want to train. Fine, okay? You are non-negotiable on those two sessions of the week, and you're going to get plenty of rest in between, so you don't really need to worry too much about rest. The real thing with the weekend warrior is the realistic expectations. You are not going to make any noticeable improvements in a 6-week period, in a 3-month period. You might see some change between what you look like on day one and 6 months, day one and a year. And that's the way that you should structure your expectations. Don't expect to go to class once or twice a week and in a couple of months see a significant improvement in your footwork, your hand speed, your flexibility. It's just not going to happen. All right. And nothing wrong with it. I'm just asking you to set a realistic expectation for yourself so that you don't get disheartened when it doesn't happen. Just train and enjoy training and make slow, steady progress. And this is why for you guys, the weekend warriors, that training time needs to be so unnegotiable, because removing one of those 2 hours means you're removing 50% of your mat time that week. And that's going to have a significant impact on your long-term progress. The part-time trainer. So part-time trainer means you're getting to training 3 or 4 times a week. You spend more time in terms of your overall exercise doing your martial arts than you do anything else. This might be someone who doesn't really enjoy going to the gym. You don't really like weightlifting. You don't really like running or other sports. You found a martial art and you love it and you commit. That's your exercise for the week. You're going to see improvements at a faster rate. Not massively faster, but at a faster rate, because you're just spending more time on the mats. You're getting more feedback. You're getting more coaching. You're going to improve a little bit faster. You cannot still have the same goals as the weekend warrior. You just might be able to get to them quicker. Not a lot changes between these two guys, the weekend warrior and the part-time trainer. The part-time trainer will just progress through things a lot quicker. The weekend warrior shouldn't look at a part-time trainer and think, oh, I should be as good as that guy. They're going to surpass you in their progress. What I'll say for the part-time trainer is do ensure that you try to find a way of doing something else, because too much of the same thing can be damaging in its own regards, in its own way. If I'm always punching forward, if I'm always kicking forward, I'm going to end up with a very weak posterior chain, my back. So go to the gym once or twice a week and focus on some pulling movements that retract your shoulder blades, that clench your glutes and stretch out your hips and lift you upwards and backwards, because you're not getting any of this stuff, this kind of stimulation in your training. Go kick a ball around or just do something different. So you move in a different way and you engage different motor patterns in your body and you don't end up messing yourself up by just doing too much of one thing. Finally, the full timer, the guy you really are, you're working towards becoming a world champion, a British champion, a UFC fighter. You want to take it professionally. You want to train 6 days a week, guys, 6 days a week, one day off for complete rest. Within those 6 days, on at least 5 of those days, you want to train 2 times a day. We're talking full timers here, right? You basically don't work or very little. Each of those training sessions would be between, depending on what the focus is, 45 minutes to an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, depending on what you're working on. One of those sessions per day will be a very technique drill focused session on something specific. Kicking, punching, grappling, whatever it might be. The other session will be one of a few things. A sparring session, general sparring. A conditioning session. A strength session or a cardio session. So once a day, you're working on your skills, developing and improving your skills. And once a day, you're working on developing and improving the machine that's going to perform those skills, your body, getting your conditioning up, getting yourself stronger, or putting it into practice in sparring. You're going to set yourself a very strict goal, a very strict objective. You're going to set yourself deadlines, a fight, an event, a tournament, because you need something to work towards and periodize your training towards in order to reach up to that point. So that's how I would go about it, guys. Let me just sum that up for you. Work out what your goal is and how many hours you can commit to that goal and be realistic in it. Weekend warrior, couple of hours, part-timer, 3 to 4, full-timer, 5-6 days a week. Be clear on your goals. Decide what style you want to improve at. If it's multiple styles, decide which one takes priority. And if it doesn't, then you know it's 50-50. Be clear on what level you want to get to with it and what you're trying to achieve. Make it non-negotiable. So once you've set those days, set those times, set those classes, the wife says, stay at home, let's watch a film. Say, sorry, training, I have to go, right? The dog vomits on the floor, quickly clean it up, be 5 minutes late to class, go to training. You've had a long day at work, your boss beat you up, you're really tired, you can't be bothered, go to training. It's not negotiable, go to training. Don't have to do well, but go to training. Don't underestimate the importance of rest, especially those on the full-time program or those of you that are part-time trainers. Fit in those rest days in between. Don't try to train yourself to death. If you're the full-timer training twice a day, you need to start taking naps. Yeah, it sounds ridiculous, but that's what full-time fighters do. Train in the morning, they eat, they have a nap, they chill for the day, they go back training in the evening. That's the objective to do it, yeah? And be realistic in your expectations. Train, enjoy your training, but don't try and kill yourself. Yeah, it's just a bit of sport, just a bit of fun. Unless you're a full-time UFC fighter, then it's your job. Guys, I'm gonna hold it there. We hit the 45-minute mark and I've not eaten breakfast and I am sweating profusely. I feel like we have done enough for today. Please comment down below. Please like the video. Please subscribe. If you're listening on Spotify or another podcast platform, thank you for listening. Share us around. Show it to friends who you think will enjoy it. Let me know what you want me to talk about on the next episode, and I will see you on the next one.